I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
Anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My arm is kind of rash. Is that a rash? And I had Asian food, and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
All right. Well, we've got a real treat for you guys today. It's our first venture into the world of music with a guest here today. He's a good friend of mine from back home in Detroit. He's a member of the rock band Junior Junior. You can find on Twitter and Instagram at Junior Junior Music. They're about to kick off the fall tour, and you can find information about that at juniorjuniormusic.com/tour. My good friend Josh Epstein is in the house. Thanks for coming, Josh.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be your first musical guest.
Yeah. No, us too. We're interested in some stories that aren't just about social anxiety and improv.
Well, you came to the wrong place.
Yeah, the improv. your social anxiety has always been a little bit more musical and premeditated. So we're really excited to have you.
Cool. Yeah, I can't wait to talk about everything. Me at a good time.
We'll talk about everything. When you said musical guest, it sounds like you're just here to play music for us.
Yeah. Which is, I thought I was gonna. I thought we were combining music with improv, and I was just gonna have to make up songs. About ailments.
No.
The audience throws out like ankle.
You don't know. You've never done a podcast before. There's no audience.
But hey, what the heck? That's what we do. And we don't expect you to sing about ankles. We would like your ankle to sing. We just yell out a part of your body and want music to come out of it. Fart noises, armpit, go, Madeline.
Does anybody ever ask you to do that? Like make music immediately?
No, but a couple weeks ago, we were playing at a festival in Alabama called Sloss Fest. Mm-hmm. And when we got there, someone was like, oh, Ryan Adams last night just killed it. He was just making up songs about Alabama. And I have a serious beef with Ryan Adams. So Ryan Adams tried to steal my girlfriend one time. Remember Courtney?
Oh, yeah.
He like took her into a bathroom and like tried to trade shirts with her, and I'm sure he's a nice guy. And
Ryan Adams.
Let's be honest. He did trade shirts with her, so he saw her naked. And I've talked to him about it since, although I was really inebriated, so I came across really like way overly aggressive to him.
Sure.
I think he probably made a lot more mistakes when he was not sober.
We all do.
But yeah, so I was like on stage and I was like, I'm sick of being told that Ryan Adams set was the best. So I made up a song about how he's the worst on stage. And that was kind of improv. It really
did
worked.
People like it?
Oh, they freaked out, yeah.
They loved it because they were like, we hate Ryan Adams. He stole our girlfriends too.
No, I think that everyone was just kind of like, you know, excited that they were witnessing like a beef in real time, you know, not even on Twitter.
Yeah. Did it get back to Ryan Adams?
Probably not. I'm not that famous.
It wasn't like The Rock calling Vin Diesel a chicken shit on Instagram.
The fastest way to end a beef is to not be a famous person.
I don't know. Not being famous has started a lot of my beefs.
Josh, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you fear death?
This is a tricky question because when I first started listening to your podcast, which was the first episode, in a worse place than I am now. And I remember thinking about what my answer to that question would have been. And it would have been zero because I welcomed it. It's not and not even in like a I want to kill myself way, but more like it would probably be easier to be dead. And so like if for some reason today I got hit by a bus, awesome. So there was no fear. I actually got a no fear sticker and put it on the back of my car. But now I'm happier about life and more excited. And so I would say 8. You know, I don't want to die. I feel like I haven't done half the stuff that, you know, Yoda has planned for me.
What made life so hard 4 or 5 months ago?
It was my first like mental breakdown. Mm. So it was a lot of processing and you know, and then there's, it just takes so much energy to live life in a way that is you're going to be able to sustain happiness that I almost like didn't feel like I had that much energy in me.
Yeah.
Sort of it's basically a hopeless feeling.
Yeah.
Or a feeling that it wasn't worth being hopeful.
Yeah. Right. So you said you had sort of a mental breakdown. Was it sort of a period or is there a concrete moment you can point to when you like lost your shit in a coffee bean or something?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could point to this moment where I was coming home from a rave, which I would never go to. It was like 5:30 in the morning. I was on a lot of drugs that I shouldn't have been mixing and really drunk and walking. I decided I'd walk back from the rave to my loft. And I live downtown, but I was walking through Skid Row and I was on ketamine. Was one
what
of the
is,
drugs.
What
that
is that?
It's like you're kind of like being John Malkovich-ing your own body. Like you're like piloting the ship,
oh,
but like
no.
you can't like really feel what's
Why
happening.
Why would you want that?
I don't know. I was sad.
It's like special K. You've heard special K, right? K,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I've heard people say special K.
Yeah. Yeah. When you were on special K, they would say that to you. Adeline, you're on ketamine. You're in a K-hole.
I ate a lot of special K when I was on Weight Watchers because it has very few points. It's a different...
you are the least cool person I know.
Yeah, you're just now figuring that out.
No, I just like to point it out from time to time. You're great. Madeline's great. She meant sincerely that thing she said about special.
So you're walking through Skid Row.
I was walking through Skid Row.
You've done Malkovich to your body.
Yeah, and but then you know I was like I had mixed it with like cocaine so I could stay awake, and then also Oxycontin because my shoulder was hurting. Yeah, it was bad.
It was really bad.
Yeah, it was everything.
Yeah.
And so I was like stumbling home through Skid Row, and this like really nice homeless guy came up to me and was like, dude. You're going to get killed. I'm going to walk you back to your place and you're going to give me $5 when I get you there. And so that was kind of like the moment where, you know, I saw my therapist a couple days later and she's like, you're going to die. You're like, you're actually going to die.
Yeah. That's so a rock bottom.
That was a rock bottom moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, it's good. Nice to be able to laugh about it. Right.
Yeah. Well, it is, right?
Yeah.
So then so you hit that rock bottom moment and then what did you do?
Yeah.
What did you do right after?
So some sobriety, therapy. I started seeing an energy healer. I got into guided crystal meditation.
Oh, wow. Don't just brush over that. Tell us about guided crystal meditation.
It's just kind of like trying to bring awareness back to myself and figure out a way. You know, I think what the crux of it all is, because at the risk of having like a 3-hour podcast episode, but the crux of it all is that, you know, I was not happy with myself deep down. There were a lot of things that I was doing that were like cyclically making me feel worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I kind of broke those cycles and started to figure out, you know, a way to be proud of myself and happy with myself, it all kind of changed.
Yeah.
And my relationship with all of the different, you know, parts of my life is a lot different now. But I think that you can cloud that perspective with so many things for so long that you end up not necessarily being the author of your own life.
What does your best show experience feel like for you?
At this point, it's really nice to just kind of like, I think that I got caught up in the whole arms race of production in terms of live performance. So like when we first started, I wanted everything to be visual and I wanted to create an experience where someone walked into a place and could turn their brain off and be guided in terms of like where they should be paying attention.
Mm.
But I think that started to make me feel a little bit like one of those animatronic mice at Chuck E. Cheese, you know, where it's like the lights go off and like I start and then I stop. And, you know, so now it's just I'm trying to focus on like, let's get rid of the things behind us and you know, kind of like this is so new agey and cheesy, but like just trying to surrender to the love every day and like try and invite people in and make it about them. Cause it's ultimately like it's their show, you know, like I could be there and make it about me, but that just makes me feel like I'm boring.
I hear that.
And now so are there still, I mean, surely those voices still exist where you do something and you're like, ugh, that's not good enough, or oh, we could have been on a bigger stage or done something better. Now, what do you do when those voices start to bubble up? How do you cope?
I have a bunch of coping mechanisms now from my one of my energy healers.
Yeah,
you know, I just kind of like surrendering to love is kind of a big deal. I know it's like.
What does that mean? Like, how do you actively?
Concept. Yeah. And I remember the first time I heard it, I was a kid and I was following Devendra Banhart around for a couple shows, and I remember talking to him. Like, I finally got to talk to him, and I was like, "What? How are you so positive?" And he's like, "You just got to surrender to the love." And I remember just being like, "Oh, fucking asshole! Like, that's such a shitty thing to say. That means nothing."
Right.
But the older I get, the more I'm like, "Oh, fuck! Like, there is some sort of like allowance." Of yourself and spirit if you allow yourself to just be open to it and to not get in your own way and to not make it about your ego and be selfish about it, then like it actually does make the experience kind of better and you're more open to it. So I think that that's like one of my biggest tools at this point.
So
and
it's
then
almost
some
like
other
a mantra at this point, like, you know, do you like repeat it in your head or
no,
do you,
there's like things I say like universe, take this from me. I accept myself, I surrender to the love, and then I have like little exercises my therapist has given me where I can, if I'm feeling really, really under attack, I can kind of like go into a special secret cage that I've made for myself. It's really weird.
Like what? No, I love this. This is like my bread and butter.
No, so it's
I
like,
love
you know,
this
like,
stuff.
You
yeah.
do this, like, you do these like this series of tapping with your fingers and, and like as you tap, it reinforces this feeling in your brain. And so like if I'm in this situation and I tap my fingers and think about being in this fort that I made when I was a kid with a spirit fox guiding me, it helps. This probably sounds crazy to you.
No, see, what sounds crazy is people live their whole lives being miserable and think there's no way to change it. Like, it makes me, it like bums me out that people are so judgmental of like that we have to put this disclaimer of like, oh, this sounds really stupid and new agey. Right. And like, because like, I feel like I'll read something or hear something, you know, and like, I'll think something like, oh, you know, we're all worthy of love or like, oh, I have to like, just like think about, you know, like surrendering to the love. And then I have this other judgmental voice that's like, ugh, this is so stupid. Or like, what would somebody who like has to go to a job every day that they hate say about this? Like, like, I feel like for me, there's this weird baggage of like, am I in a, like, is my privilege making me able to like focus so much on how I feel inside? And I just think that is a little bit poisonous because I think like so many people when they want to sort of shut that kind of thinking out, it's people who want to like justify their misery a little bit, like people who are like, there is no way for me to be happier in my life, so like the idea that like somebody else is achieving that through this like dumb new agey bullshit, like I have to call that out and say that it's garbage, because if not, you know, maybe I could be doing something to make myself happier.
Well, let me give you a positive outlook on all that, because I think that part of what I think is interesting about having had the experiences that I've had in my life is that I think I can relate to most people, and I think that it's a gift to be able to relate to most people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe when you start to think about that, be grateful for the fact that you understand the perspective that you're apprehensive about abandoning. You know, it's like I could if I go too far in the new agey direction, like I'm going to be the person that for 32 years of my life I hated.
And
it's important to be aware of that. It's important to like stay accessible to everyone else, because otherwise, you know, you're creating just as many boundaries as you're trying to break down within.
I think you're also creating bad art when you separate yourself. That's that gift that you're speaking of. It's also a bit of a responsibility that there are some of us who are capable of having an experience and relating it back to the universal experience of humanity.
Yeah.
And that if you're capable of doing that, music is a great tool. If you're capable of doing that, you should write, you know, that I always felt like my great strength as a writer is, and it's maybe my weakness as somebody who attempts to sell writing, but my great strength as a writer is that I can get inside other people's heads pretty well. And so I don't constantly have to write my own story. I can write a story that I think speaks to most people on some level, and that a good pop song speaks to you know, most people on some level. And it's easy to then say, well, that good pop song is, you know, sure, it's catchy, but it's kind of cheesy. It's a little bit lame. But no, it's speaking to a mass of people on just some level. And then they can take that surface level and they can bring it inward. But I've always felt that was like a strength of your songwriting, of your music.
As someone who's known Ben for a long time, like I actually watched him give his high school graduation speech.
That's true.
Wow.
I can say that, and yeah, I don't know if this translates to the listeners, because you have to really spend time with someone to know this, but like, mm-hmm. I think that Ben is a little bit more ascended in terms of his perspective and
do tell. And, do tell.
I always think that like when I'm because Ben is very helpful and like he's someone that I try and run problems by.
Yes.
And when I talk to Ben about it, it almost seems like he's like he's standing a little or sitting a little higher up in terms of like his plane of vision. And I always feel like he can see things on a bigger level than I can, and it's really a special gift.
So you were not always a musician. Is that correct? Or like
I always was. It was a secret part of my life. Like in high school, I was, you know, I kind of was able to relate to all of the kids in the school, you know, but I think that my identity primarily was wrapped up in, you know, being good at soccer and you know, chasing after the girls. And so when I first went to college, I was playing in a band in high school. I was younger than all the other guys. Mm. A lot of them were out of high school but it was something I kind of kept secret. I didn't really tell my high school friends about it. It was just like a thing that I did. And then when I went, I had the opportunity to go to college to play soccer. And so it was like I had to choose between staying in the band and, you know, following the path of like, yeah. But you know, it's obviously a college is like the thing if you're like a middle class white person, that's just what you're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And so I played soccer for 2 years in college until my father got cancer, and I'd wanted to be closer to home, so I transferred to Michigan State. Mm-hmm. My father recovered. He's great. So
oh, great.
No one has to feel bad.
Yeah, great.
And at Michigan State, I contracted meningitis.
Meningitis, I feel like when I went to college, all of our like orientation meetings were about how like maybe you could get meningitis. Yeah. I was terrified of meningitis when I went to college.
Right.
If you were going to get it from a college, Michigan State would be the one to go to.
Definitely.
Like that, like if you wanted to like major in like in hotel management, or you wanted meningitis, Michigan State would be the place for you to go.
How did you get meningitis?
Well, so that's the thing. I didn't get the bacterial kind. I had like a viral kind of meningitis, which to this day, I don't think anyone knows why I had it or what was going on.
Because bacterial is the one that kills you.
Bacterial is the one that kills you. Viral,
that's when your neck
viral
hurts and then you die?
Yeah, yeah. Viral, you have the same symptoms, but you know, you can't treat it, but it's typically not gonna kill you because the bacteria is what kills you. But people that have viral meningitis a lot of times will like lose a limb some like really fucked up shit happens.
Holy shit.
And I was really lucky to avoid
viral diabetes.
How did you know you had it? Was it the same symptoms?
I had like a headache and neck ache, and I just could not fall asleep. And it had been like 2 days, so finally. I went to the doctor and they said, "Oh, I think you have the flu or something. Go back to your house." And then I remember,
you have the flu. Go back to your house.
So a doctor has explained this to me, and I can't explain it to the audience. But somehow, when you have meningitis, the swelling around the brain tricks some of the nervous system into doing things that it's not supposed to do, and so it's common for people to have like. For their blood sugar to drop. And so I remember waking up in the middle of the night, and I had a roommate named Lizzie, and I was walking to the bathroom, and I remember this all happening where I was just feeling like I was like losing control of my body, and I ended up marching in place while peeing in the bathtub.
Whoa. No.
But like not able to do anything. But I was definitely like awake. It's kind of like being on K. Like, I was like definitely like I was like in there, and but I couldn't control my body.
That's
and I was
insane.
Just like marching in place, and I just started like moaning. And then my roommate called 911. And when they got there, they asked me my name. And I was telling them my name was 45 or something. I just had no idea.
Doesn't it make sense though? Like, why people used to think people got possessed by the devil?
Yes.
Because that's if somebody in like medieval times saw that, they would be like, the only explanation for this is like Satan's living inside you and we gotta like yell at you with a cross.
I haven't ruled that out in modern times.
I almost just started hitting you.
So you peed in the tub. You said, "I'm 45. Yeah. And then what happened?
Then, you know, they took me on an $8,000 mile-long ambulance ride.
Oh,
where they gave me, like, that glucose stuff because they thought noticed my blood sugar was dropping. And when I got to the hospital, you know, it just kind of all this weird stuff started happening. I had a seizure and fell off the bed and hit my nose. And then I had to take, like, seizure medicine. And I was... I was unconscious for a little bit. But I ended up being in the hospital for a month. And then when
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah. And then when I got out of the hospital, I had missed so much school that I couldn't go back. Because it was like the beginning of the semester, and it was like, fuck it. So I ended up at that point.
Were you playing soccer at Michigan?
I was
also
trying to. I was like walking on.
Oh, yeah.
I hadn't made the team. So I started playing music because I was just bored. And music, for whatever reason, was just kind of like flowing. And I went to New York and started playing in like coffee shops.
By yourself?
Yeah, by myself. Yeah. And ended up getting like a demo deal from Atlantic Records.
From playing in a coffee shop?
Yeah. Well, I got asked to go play for the president of the label in his office, which I did, and then he gave me
Who
a demo
Who asked you
deal.
To do that?
46.
You were fucking waiting for that one.
I mean, there's going to be a several 45 jokes on the tip of my tongue from now
Someone's
on.
Someone's going to hear that joke and ask you to perform comedy in their office, and you're going to get a record deal.
It'll be the biggest audience I've ever performed in front of.
So the physical ailments kind of steered me into music, which I, you know, I haven't turned back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I mean, it sounds like you've, for the longest time, maybe always, and I feel this way about myself, or at least there was a great period in my life where I felt this way, needed like an identity, needed something that defined you in a way that made you feel that you weren't getting enough support from within, so a title like, you know, star athlete or star musician or whatever was more important to you at definitely when I first met you, I would say that so I've known Josh, I guess, since what, you were like 11 years old? Yeah.
Wow.
So Josh and my brother, would that have been your first band with my
Definitely,
brother?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the name of the band again?
Well, it was many iterations. It was The Passion in Belgium.
Right, The Passion
and
in Belgium.
And then one time Ben's dad, I kept on calling him Dr. Axelrod, and he was like, you can just call me Ken. So let me name the band Call Me Ken.
Yeah. Incidentally, The Passion in Belgium is Waffles, if you were wondering. yeah. So as long as I've known you, there was a part of you that was not self-satisfied. And I don't mean in a smug way. I mean like that wasn't satisfied with being you that it led to what, you know, Madeline termed it, that that you've achieved quite a bit, that you had quite a bit of success. And it seems like that maybe is what fueled it. And it's maybe what fuels it in most people who are truly successful, is that they're never satisfied with anything. But those people are also not happy. And so now that you're in a place now where you feel a little bit better about you, and you feel maybe a little bit more of that, you know, a happiness that's less contingent on successes, what's different?
My work's going to start going to shit.
It already has. That's why we brought you here.
I hate when people say, when I like express to them like, I really just wish I could be, you know, come to a place where I can feel more satisfied. And when people go like, well, I don't know, maybe this anxiety is what fuels you. No. Fuck you.
No, I don't believe that
idea that, like, you can't be happy to be creative. No. I think that's a load of bullshit.
Oh, I don't think you can.
I know you were joking, but I'm airing some grievances here.
I have a stockpile of so much sadness and, like, fucked up shit that, like, I really do think that I can access it at this point.
Yeah.
I think it's dangerous to, but I think I know how to. And sometimes, you know, if that's where you need to go, then, you know, I don't think that we should be scared to go there.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get into a personal belief here. I think one of the problems with our society is that we take all of our art from people who are too young to have much of anything to say about the world. And that by the time someone is wise enough to have something to communicate, they've moved on to whatever, you know, like in that way that like that 20-year-olds are supposed to have dreams and 30-year-olds are supposed to put that aside and, you know, raise families and be this sort of mature version of yourself. But that now that I'm in my 30s, I would say that there's almost nothing that I want to learn from somebody in their 20s. And that's all of the art, you know, like everyone we can think of in a rock band that isn't, you know, Bruce Springsteen level is like 23 years old. And that now that you're at an age, and not just an age, but like at a personal level of development where you can see things more clearly, I think that you do owe that to your listenership? I know that it makes the music maybe less surface enjoyable to, you know, tweens, and that's where the money is in all of our art. But that that you can say something about the world now that you just couldn't have said back when you were so wrapped up in being a musician as opposed to making music, you know?
Sure, but I think there's also so many channels for it.
Like sure.
That, and I think that part of your duty as someone who wants to continue to be creative is to find as many outlets for what you can come up with creatively would be. So for you guys, it's, you know, making a podcast is a new outlet. And,
sure.
And this is a creative venture. And, you know, for me, it's like I don't necessarily know that I could write a song that, you know, a tween fan that you're describing mm-hmm. would love at this point for me.
Right.
But
yeah.
That's not to say that I couldn't write one for Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Lord knows I'm trying. So,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know, I think it's just about perspective. And
yeah.
You can make anything and it's all valid.
Sure.
And I think there's like, it's maybe like, I think there's a little bit of freedom that comes when you're not looking to your art to make you feel good all the time. If you can like find your sense of self-worth within you and separate it from the things that you create, I feel like it might give you more freedom creatively because mm-hmm. you're not putting so much pressure on what you're making to like fill a void inside of you.
Sure. I mean, don't you guys find as writers that sometimes when you're trying to write autobiographically or like in memoir form, you feel more disconnected with yourself than
yeah.
when you're writing a character and then all of a sudden like these things about you that you hadn't processed come out in this character and you see parts of yourself so honestly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent. I mean, I think maybe I've gotten closer now to the place where I don't go into it thinking it's going to be autobiographical or not. I just will always fill a character with what I know.
So you tour a lot, right?
Yes.
Is touring gross?
Yeah.
Touring's gross, especially, I mean, so as a child, I was diagnosed with OCD, like, very, very badly. Like, you know, the kind of thing where, like, my hands were cracked and bleeding from washing them so much. And
wow.
Like, so many routines. And I think it's common for creative people to have that. And then, you know, as I was treated for it, but not necessarily treated for it on the emotional level, treated mm-hmm. for it medically and
yes.
chemically, it kind of like I internalized it and it ended up manifesting itself in a lot of different ways that I'm still trying to deal with and process now.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely it has made so while I'm not as like acutely sensitive to germs and terrified of them, it's still something that's like innately in my body
uh-huh.
and consciousness.
Mm.
And so yeah, there's, I mean, I have one anecdote that I can share that can illuminate this.
It's gonna be so gross, I can tell already.
Yeah.
So back when I was in my other project, The Silent Years, we were on tour and we were trying to cover a lot of ground in a van. And so mm-hmm. I, at that point, was taking Adderall to stay up and drive
uh-huh.
while everyone slept because mm-hmm. I always am the guy that sacrifices for everyone else.
Because you need to feel...
need to feel like yeah. we're doing it. And, you know,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I remember it was like 4:30 in the morning and we were somewhere on the border of Idaho and Washington. And I stopped at this terrifying looking gas station because I really had to take a shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I put down toilet paper and I did the whole thing. And I went to the bathroom. And then when I stood up, I looked down and there was semen on the tip of my penis.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, and my first thought was like, I wonder if I'd like ejaculated somehow or like how that would have happened. And then I looked at I looked down at the toilet and like under the seat was a bunch of cum. Some trucker had apparently been like sitting there and jerking off before me and came on the bottom of the toilet seat. And when I stood up, my penis grazed
oh, no.
it, and so it was like on my penis and in the hole of my penis.
No, it was straight up
in
your urethra.
Yeah, it was
your
it was
urethra
in there,
was
yeah.
full no. of a trucker's cum.
Yeah,
That's yeah. I don't even know if I don't even know if the timeline works. That's where you got meningitis.
Just died. You should have died.
Yeah, you should have died.
So R.I.P.
I found a bottle of hydrogen peroxide and just immediately just started dumping it down my penis as far as I could get it because I didn't know anything about it and I was freaking out because I thought STDs and all this stuff. But I couldn't wake anyone up. Because everyone was sleeping and they needed their sleep. And so I was driving.
You're
like,
such a hero.
I was driving like having a meltdown.
Sure. Of course.
You know, freaking out until someone woke up in the van and happened to be like, most STDs die in the air once they're exposed to the air. So like you probably don't have to worry about AIDS, which was the big one. I was like, chlamydia, I'll fucking deal with. So I definitely had Trucker come in me. And I mean, that's just one example of things that can happen. And so,
can or will happen. Yeah. Young musicians out there, find your trucker cum, get it out of the way early.
That's so crazy. So you're a germaphobe.
Yeah.
I feel like you're in a business where you're constantly putting yourself in environments.
Yeah.
Like that push those buttons.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and after that, it was like. There was like a real thing about like trying to, go to the bathroom in my own toilet, which is, I've driven 2 hours just to go to the bathroom at this point.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that experience sort of like ruined public bathrooms.
Well, it's like, it's just kind
ruined
of like, it's kind of like anything. It's just like everything has the possibility to be perfect and amazing, but people ruin it.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with every single thing. People ruin everything.
It's true.
Democracy.
Truckers, you've destroyed public bathrooms.
That bathroom was perfect and amazing.
It's our mecca.
Until one trucker.
Right, it's like a personal responsibility. That if you're coming in public, clean it up. I would say.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
I always do.
Yeah. I guess I better get a napkin then. No, that's horrifying. So in general, do you find because you'll be in a van or a bus at different stages of your career with like how many guys would be on there with you?
At this point, there's like eight people on the bus.
So how dirty is it? Like, is it because they're all guys, right? Mm. For the most part, they're all going to be guys. Is it like being in a frat house?
No, because everyone in my band is really like we have like the nicest, most chill group of guys. You've met them; they're all so cool. But no, it's more like my. Germophobia doesn't extend as much to people that I know.
Okay.
It's more like people that I don't know. So it's like when I first get on the bus, I think about who was on the bus before me.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that they probably didn't like wipe down the whole bunk. And so every time I like touch a wall, I'm like, ah, fuck, maybe someone was like jerking off and then touched that wall.
Yeah.
Because like there's a lot of weird shit that happens in these,
I mean,
but thank God we are now sharing a bus. It's basically like us and Three Dog Night. And I think that Three Dog Night are like 75-year-old Christians. And I don't think, hoping that they're not doing anything except for they're probably incontinent. There's probably shit everywhere.
Oh, that's true. Well, maybe if your dick grazes like a pile of dust, that with some Three Dog Night cum.
Three dog.
Yeah. Three Dog Night. That's a slow night for old Benny boy. Wait a minute. So how do you feel about hotel rooms then?
Hotels are terrifying.
Yeah, agreed.
Because, first of all, everyone does the worst shit that they possibly would ever think to do in a hotel.
Yeah.
And they don't, so it's like... everything from the washcloths where I feel like people have probably come to the bedspreads that I don't want to touch to the floors because I don't know where people's feet have been. It's all terrifying. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that is the worst is like wanting to turn on the TV and then thinking about the fact that someone was jerking off and touching the remote.
Yeah.
Or like whatever they were doing.
The remote's supposed to be the dirtiest.
It's the dirtiest.
Which I never realized until like... some hotels now have that weird remote. Like, have you seen it? It's like a clean remote.
Right.
It like looks almost disposable.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I like a little bit resent those hotels for pointing out how dirty other remotes are.
Yeah.
It just seems too weird.
Yeah. Mm.
Ugh. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like I know about these things because like as someone who travels on a bus, like, everyone has the need to masturbate. And so, like, getting into a hotel, I'm always like, yeah, this is where I'll do it. Mm-hmm. but then it's like I contributed to this thing. It's almost like you feel like a Nazi. Like you're like I contributed to this this cause.
Well, I Nazi. Know that's perhaps secret, extreme.
Secret cum Nazi. Yeah.
I guess I could see it.
And so, how do you deal? So, are you still like medicated for OCD?
So what I've found this year in I went to a really progressive psychiatrist in Los Angeles mm-hmm. who is $500 an hour.
Oh man,
great! And all not, the good ones yeah, want to
not
take,
covered
yeah.
by insurance. So
yeah, no, yeah, nobody
thanks,
good
Dr.
is.
Thanks, Dr. Rymach.
Yeah,
but yeah, no. So I got diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, which is actually mm-hmm. like a little bit worse than. It's like higher up on the disorder spectrum. And so
is it?
Yeah. It's like fewer people have generalized anxiety than have like regular, you know, minor anxiety disorder. So but, you know, at the same time, I have some substance stuff. So he didn't want to prescribe any of the narcotic stuff to me. So I'm on a little bit of something to not have to feel the OCD super well. And then mm-hmm. I have a non-narcotic anxiety medication that I take. And that's changed my world.
And you've been taking it?
I've been taking it for 6 months.
Wow. And it's been effective.
It's very effective. Yeah. It's called gabapentin. And basically like it's used to treat seizures and stuff and nerve stuff. But there's been new research that shows that it treats anxiety in people like mm-hmm. me. So it's actually been really helpful. And I don't know. I've found like a healthy relationship with marijuana in terms of like medically treating some stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, now I just have to be careful that I don't over-consume marijuana.
Sure, sure.
It's really easy to do and fun.
Oh, yeah. When I quit smoking cigarettes, just like a couple months later, I was like, oh, shit, no, I just smoke a pack of marijuana. And then I was like, I think I'll just smoke a pack of marijuana. Just rolled with it. No, but, yeah, you do realize the ways in which we compensate.
Definitely. I mean, you know, I think it would be great to be a person that was so spiritually clean that I didn't need anything, but I'm not quite there yet.
No, I'm spiritually a hotel room that everyone's been masturbating in.
Yeah, that's why I feel that way too.
Yeah.
Gross.
It's just my spirit.
Yeah.
My body is just one that I've been masturbating. Oops. Don't listen, Mom.
So are we going to play some games? Because there's always games that go horribly awry.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we were going to... Yeah. I mean, should we play our...
We had a game that we were going to do separate from you. Because
I think we should
you.
Do it with you, though, because you want to play a game. Play,
I mean, your games are terrible. I like it.
offense taken. So our topic for today, which we weren't going to include you in because we felt it would be insulting to your chosen career, was rock concerts, gross or cool.
I know where you stand on this.
Well,
but we have to. So are you, Ben? You are debating cool.
I'm debating
right?
on behalf
what?
Of cool.
Well, it's just it's like a high school
stance.
Debate when you. I mean, because both of us think everything's gross.
Because I took Ben to a Jose Gonzalez concert and he had to walk outside because someone touched him from behind by accident.
Wait,
why
are
did
you
they
kidding?
Do that? Can we debate why that they did that? Can we get that guy in here and debate him?
He left because someone touched you from behind.
He stood outside the entire concert.
Oh, Ben.
Madeline was with me at a restaurant earlier today.
Yeah, we got breakfast at a restaurant. And
a waitress came and I don't know what she took away from me, but she grazed the top of. Oh, she took the check away and grazed the top of my hand, and I had to scrape it on the bottom part of the table 50 times in a row.
That's way dirtier. That's where people stick gum and shit.
Like, yeah, the underside of a table. But it was. Yeah. But I asked him, "Do you want hand sanitizer?" And he's like, "No,
I just need the friction.
Scrape my hand 50 times."
But someone should have pointed out this gum thing to me.
Well, but I thought it. But it was like an OCD thing.
Yeah, no, I should. Like it didn't occur to me that hand. I was scraping it in a terrible place, though. Yeah,
I don't think you can scrape germs off your hand, period.
No, I needed the skin to go away.
Oh, yes.
That sounds way worse.
Yes. Okay, so rock concerts.
Rock concerts,
gross
or cool.
Ben has been, I'm even happier that you have to debate for cool.
Yeah.
Because you so much don't agree with them being cool. This is like when you have to debate in high school that like deforestation is good.
Yeah. Well, I think that. Let's just go into it. I won't preface my stance.
Okay. And I think in debate the pro side has to go first. So I think you have to lead, and then I'll give you a rebuttal.
Okay. Well, I would say that yes, my my natural inclination would be to say that rock concerts are gross, not cool. But then I remember how uncool I am. And so by virtue of me not thinking that they're cool, they kind of just have to be cool. Like, that's the transitive property, right? Like, if I think something is – so, like, if Hitler said something that – Hitler says Jews are bad, that means Jews are good because Hitler's bad, right?
You're asking your opponent if you're right?
Yes. Am I right, Madeline?
No.
Why don't you let the judge chime in?
Is this not judge?
I think you're, oh, boy. This is already falling off the
Madeline, I think
rails.
You're allowed to object.
No, chime in, judge.
Are you making yourself the straw man in this argument?
I don't. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Yes.
No, I agree with Ben, though. He's uncool.
I'm uncool. Yeah.
Okay, so I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I agree with your basic supposition that you are uncool.
Yeah.
However, even an uncool person can have valid judgment. And you yourself have been in the position of being at a rock concert, and your senses have told you that it is indeed gross. And I would also add to that by saying, I beg you to tell me any situation where...
Yes.
As many as 1,000 people or more are in close quarters with each other, sharing like skin and sweat and like dumping sodas on the ground. Like, is there any situation with that many people together at once that is not gross?
So I'm tasked with coming up with a place where 1,000 people or more are touching each other.
Are gathered in close quarters.
And we're saying
and
it's
not gross.
It's not gross.
I think any large gathering is inherently gross because of all the bodily fluids and nastiness.
My argument with that would be that, yes, you are correct that there will be at least a modicum of grossness involved in that amount of people pressed up against each other. Mm-hmm. But the real question is, can it be more cool than it is gross? And I would say, yes, Coachella is the coolest. Everyone knows it. That's why all these people go there to do the grossest thing in the world.
The grossest people in the world think Coachella is cool.
But there do the least cool people in the world think Coachella is gross? And I'm one of them, and you are too.
You're right about that. Do you have any thoughts about Coachella? I mean, have you played Coachella?
You know, we've never played Coachella. It's like the one festival that they don't want us.
Why?
That's a compliment.
Cool. Oh. You're
or gross enough. Yeah. Either way.
Well, then I would say, wait, okay, then that's the judge has given me more ammo. I would say if you have never been invited to play Coachella, that's another point for rock concerts being gross.
I object. And I guess that is, yeah, you're right. That is a pretty uncool thing of them to
it's
do
not
at
cool.
Coachella.
And what as we've established, everything in the world falls into the category of either
gross or cool.
Or cool.
And I went with Coachella because I think we would all agree that Bonnaroo is gross. Because it just seems gross. Have you played Bonnaroo?
Yeah.
How gross?
Oh, man. I remember doing this like private set late at night, and they took us on a golf cart through the place where people are camping. Mm-hmm. And it just smelled like feces. I mean, it was just terrible for like a mile. It was awful.
Because all these dummies are pooping right in the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. But let me just say, as a judge, I really respect both of you as intellectuals. I think you're both talented hosts of a podcast.
Thank you.
Talented at debate. But I think that we're talking about things on a strictly physical level. And if you think about things on a metaphysical level, a gathering of 1,000 people is very powerful and transcendent.
True.
Like think about a Mormon church, right?
Yes.
Where all these people are there with their 30 family members and they're, you know, they're unifying to kind of send their version of love up to heaven.
Or they're unifying to support a vision of the world run largely by males and they can corral a bunch of women to be their servant/sister wives. And it's what they're calling God, but what they really mean is patriarchy, which to me is pretty gross.
Well, have you guys heard the Kings of Leon story?
No.
So essentially, this is like known in the music industry, but Kings of Leon drink a lot. Mm-hmm. And in their rider, they've put down that they need garbage cans full of cat litter, like stationed at, you know, various places so that they can just go piss whenever they want. And so they have, you know, garbage cans full of cat litter like to the side of the stage so that, you know, if in the middle of the show one of them needs to take like a beer piss, they can go piss in cat litter. And so I would say that while both of you have been arguing these points gloriously, that pretty much sums up how gross rock concerts theoretically and actually are.
So I think
that that's cool. I would say that even Madeline would argue that's cool. And how do I know that? Because Madeline loves her cat. Who's cooler, Eddie Vedder or your cat June?
My cat.
Cool points win.
Oh, no, I'll concede. Somehow Ben won. No, rock concerts are officially cool.
This is what I'll say is I think I've even shown this to you. Remember when I wrote that script that was based on like that fake rock band?
Definitely.
It was like I'm trying to remember. Oh, it was a Pearl Jam concert. I think the song is Nothing Man, and it was a concert they played at Madison Square Garden, and yeah, there must have been, I don't know, what, 45,000 people in attendance, and just every single one of them was singing along to this song that wasn't about anything in particular. It was just sort of a song about some of the things we've been talking about here. Just a song about thinking that you're less than, and just like this, an entire arena full of people singing along to this song in perfect unison when they're pressed up against each other, super gross, mostly strangers, could be beating the living hell out of each other, but instead they were all singing in unison. And I will say that in spite of the fact that everything about it seemed gross to me as a person who, if I was in attendance, I would have been just crying my eyes out. That's got to be pretty cool, right?
Yeah, that's cool.
That's cool.
That's cool.
So the answer is that they are grossly cool. So what do we decide?
We should let our judge. Yeah. What wins, gross or cool?
I'm realizing that it's hard for me to be impartial because I just have such strong feelings for Ben, but I'm going to be more like King David and just split the baby.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Wow.
That's good.
Great. Yeah. That's a very kind judge.
Yes, yeah. It's very kind. Zig, who gets the other half of the baby?
I have to say, I think rock concerts are cool. There's like a punk rock element to it when like a bunch of sweaty people are in like a room, like the music's just playing. Like I fuck with that on an emotional level.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it feels like everybody agrees that there is a certain level of emotional coolness that trumps physical grossness.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly said.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's what we've decided.
Agreed.
Physically gross, emotionally cool.
That's great.
I know that wasn't the point of this game, but has any game gone well, people? Has any game gone well?
Yeah,
I would argue that none of that.
Was that game sufficiently bad?
Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
Yeah, it was just as bad as all the rest.
Great.
Here's a question.
Thank you.
Was the game gross or cool?
Oh, my God.
It was gross, right?
Yeah,
it was gross. Well, Josh, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It was a really fun time.
Honestly, it's an honor. I've been begging Ben to be on the podcast since you guys started, so thank you for finally humoring me.
No,
I'm
not at all.
I'm so glad you came on. Yeah. It was so interesting.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Whole new world for us. Yeah. Okay. Great.
I've made up my mind over and over. Keep pressing rewind, but I'm getting older.
Hey guys, if you liked the additional music you heard in this episode, it came from Josh's own band, Junior Junior, and you can find more of the same at iTunes and on their website, where you'll also find tour dates and more information. I can't be everything you want me to be. I can't be everything you want me to be.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.